We begin with a story from Bruce Feiler, who wrote this reflection about contemporary life. I hit the breaking point as a parent a few years ago. It was the week of my extended family's annual gathering in August, and we were struggling with assorted crises. My parents were aging. My wife and I were straining under the chaos of young children. My sister was bracing to prepare her preteens for bullying, sex, cyberstalking. Sure enough, one night all the tensions boiled over. At dinner, I noticed my nephew texting under the table. I knew I shouldn't say anything, but I couldn't help myself and asked him to stop. Kaboom! My sister snapped at me to not discipline her child. My dad pointed out that my girls were the ones balancing spoons on their noses. My mom said none of the grandkids had manners. Within minutes, everyone had fled to separate corners. Later, my dad called me to his bedside. There was a palpable sense of fear I couldn't remember hearing before. "Our family's falling apart," he said. "No, it's not," I said instinctively. "It's stronger than ever." But lying in bed afterward, Bruce began to wonder, was his dad right? What is the secret sauce that holds a family together? What are the ingredients that make some families effective, resilient, happy? One perspective on this family scene, which most of us might be able to recognize as somewhat familiar with a few tweaks in detail, comes from the psychologist Marshall Duke, who studies myth and ritual in American families. He says that the single most important thing you can do for your family is surprisingly simple. Make sure you develop a strong family narrative. When he began his research in the mid-1990s, there was a plethora of studies and analysis about what was heralded as the breakup of the family. Divorce, mixed-race marriage, single parenting, gay families, lots of hand-wringing about the family unit's impending destruction and the wide social and moral collapse it foretold. Around that time, Marshall Duke's wife, another psychologist named Sarah Duke, was working with children with learning disabilities. She noticed something about her students. The ones who knew a lot about their families tended to do better when faced with challenges. Marshall Duke was intrigued by this observation. Was it accurate? What other factors were important here? So he and a colleague set out to test the hypothesis. They created a Do You Know scale that asked children to answer questions, including, do you know where your grandparents grew up? Do you know an illness or something terrible that happened in your family? Do you know the story of your birth? A relevant question for Margaret's family might be, do you know why bats are part of family vacation lore? Their overwhelming conclusion, which was also based on taped dinner table conversations and other interactions with the whole family systems of the subjects, was that more knowledge had a positive impact. The more children knew about their family's history, the stronger their sense of control over their lives, the higher their self-esteem, and the more successfully they believed their families functioned. The Do You Know scale turned out to be the best single predictor of a child's emotional health and happiness. That's interesting enough, but the second round of their research was maybe even more illuminating. 2 months after they completed their study, September 11th happened. Sad as the circumstance was, the researchers recognized a rare opportunity. The families they studied had not been directly affected by the events, yet all the children had experienced the same national trauma at the same time. The researchers went back and reassessed the children. Once again, Dr. Duke said, the ones who knew more about their families proved to be more resilient, meaning they could moderate the effects of stress. Why does knowing something like where your grandmother was born help a child deal with a sprained ankle or even violence en large? The answers, Duke said, have to do with a child's sense of being part of a larger family. Psychologists have found that every family has a unifying narrative. These narratives take one of roughly three shapes. First, we have the ascending family narrative. Child, when we came to this country, we had nothing. Our family worked. We opened a store. Your grandfather went to high school. Your mother went to college. And now, it's your turn. Second is the descending narrative. Sweetheart, we used to have it all, and then we lost everything. Experts say that the most healthful narrative is a third one, different entirely from the other two. It's called the oscillating family narrative. Dear, let me tell you, we've had ups and downs in our family. We built a business. Your grandfather was a pillar of the community. But we also had setbacks. Your uncle is in prison. We had a house burned down. Your mom lost her dream job. But no matter what happened, we always stuck together. It's not about the story being a perfect one. How could perfection be anything but a toxic lie? It is about there being a story. Sociologists call the building of a narrative that explains what the group is about sense making. Children with the most self-confidence have what researchers call a strong intergenerational self. They know they belong to something bigger than themselves. This is what Wendell Berry made poetic in our responsive reading. Memory, native to this valley, will spread over it like a grove, and memory will grow into legend. In other words, it is important to remember, share, retell, revise, and embody stories. A traveling exhibit called A Stone of Hope, Black Experience in the Fox Cities, gives us a chance to do that this week while it's at the fellowship. It's visiting our legacy room right over there. And it comes to us from the History Museum. I hope that you'll check it out after the service. I saw a few of you in there before. And please know that you're invited to come to a reception with Chief Curator Nick Hoffman that'll be here on Thursday at 6 p.m. The story it tells is one you might not know, even if you've lived locally for many years. Before 1900, the Fox Cities were home to a growing Black population of Civil War veterans, small business owners, and community leaders. But they lost hope, and most Blacks left the area by 1920 due to increasing harassment from police, racial exclusion at hotels, racial covenants barring them from buying homes, and minstrelly advertising and entertainment. The exhibit also addresses Appleton's past sundown custom and racial exclusion from 1915 to 1961. And it tells how the Fox Cities emerged from this mountain of despair during the civil rights era. It's a powerful story, many stories, powerful stories, plural. For me, it helps to demonstrate how Appleton has moved forward in wondrous ways, while also reminding me that more work is sorely needed. When you check out the panels of pictures and text, keep your eye out for the photograph of the building on Superior Street. It has a big KKK banner, and it's also the former home of the fellowship. When I was looking at the exhibit a couple days ago, it occurred to me that all the people who lived here historically and whose images and actions are reflected in the display couldn't have known that their daily lives would one day be memorialized in this way, caught in time, for us to use as a storytelling and reflection tool. We all constantly encounter stories, even if we don't necessarily think about them being part of a larger community narrative. When I purchased a home last year, I acquired a washer and dryer. I no longer go to the laundromat off of Wisconsin Avenue. Here are things I don't miss. Lugging heavy stuff when it's icy out. Racing there after an evening meeting so I have time to complete the washing and drying cycles before they close up at 11 p.m. But here's what I do miss. Getting to watch people and witness random life stories, even playing small, unimportant roles in them from time to time. Once I gave a child a coin for the vending machine, and his eyes lit up like I was Oprah giving him a car. And the conversations I've had is the young man who came out to his family and then was kicked out, but taken in by his brand new boyfriend's extended family, even though he didn't speak much Spanish and they didn't speak hardly any English. Is he doing okay? I can only hope so. I don't think I even caught his name. Probably most impressive was the retired couple who came in with more loads than I can even describe, making trip after trip after trip to their huge van, and then explaining to me the complicated system that allowed them, incredibly, to do laundry only every 4 months, when literally everything made of fabric in their house was soiled. It's weird, right? Then there was the three-generation family who always seemed to be there. We never spoke directly, but finally, after I would say well over a year, they began nodding politely and gravely to me as they tended to their wash, as well as to the huge moving mass of toddlers in their charge. I find myself wondering if maybe they have noticed that I no longer come there. Marshall Duke and his research convinces me that stories are psychologically important. Simple tales from my laundromat days help anchor me in my own life, making me secure in the knowledge that I have a past and a trajectory. They help me make sense of my local community, and in this way, I contribute to a larger story of who we are in the Fox Cities. Just as A Stone of Hope, the traveling exhibit, seeks to tell the story of who we have been historically. But stories aren't only psychologically relevant. They're spiritually important as well. After all, isn't the idea of being connected to something larger than ourselves the very definition of spirituality? Telling our tales, whether they are true or fictitious or maybe somewhere in between, that's the closest we can ever get to watching the infinite ways we could, should, have, or will evolve. My sister Rose once expressed this to me in a lovely, thought-provoking way when she said about narrative, "It's the only way we can see all our possibilities." My friend Temim Fruchter has written about this too. She's a radical Jewish musician and activist. In my opinion, she's also a really important up-and-coming poet and essayist, so you might just see her name again one of these days. She says, "I guess one thing is stories are containers. Spirits and spirituality maybe need containers. It's why language is so exciting to me, always pushing to find shapes to contain our uncontainable things, drives, emotions, connections, prayers. They provide our narratives, connect us to one another in tangible ways. They provide beautiful homes, too, for the things that wouldn't otherwise find a way or a place to show themselves. This month's theme of tradition has helped us reflect on our fellowship traditions throughout Roger's long, happy, productive ministry here. It's been a gift to have almost a whole year to say goodbye. I have especially valued that we've taken the time to explore some of our specific traditions, talking about how they started and when, how they have served us beautifully in the past, and how they might change in the future. One of the many great fellowship traditions is our themes, even though it's a relatively new tradition. We're heading into another year of getting to work with them and all sorts of programs. Would you like a preview? Good answer. September through May, they will be invitation, letting go, ancestry, expectation, resistance, desire, liberation, creation, and blessing. Now I'd like to add something new to our themes, a common read. Here's how it will work. If you donated a book today, then you're going to need another one, right? And if you didn't, then you probably were just thinking that you needed a new book anyway. So if you brought a book to donate, you can stack them on the welcome table on your way out of the fellowship today. And I hope that you'll also consider adding to your library and your reading list the best-selling story Kindred by Octavia Butler. She's widely considered one of the most important American authors. This is a book with a few adult themes, so it probably is going to make most sense for high school ages and up. It's an incredibly compelling story, and we'll have a service based on it in November, when our theme will be ancestry. We have a handful of used copies for just a few bucks in our bookstore out in the front lobby, or you can pick it up wherever you like to do your book shopping. If it sounds fun, then I hope that you'll make time to read Kindred this summer or fall. I'm excited to reread it. Stories are so full of meaning, whether they tell of extended family drama on summer vacation, trips to the laundromat, or hometown discrimination. I hope that you will ask yourself what stories you might tell on your behalf that illustrate your own oscillating narrative of the ups and downs that make you, you, and make our community ours. Together, let's find ways to tell and hear and celebrate the stories that bind us. May it always be so.